previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
The story is true, victims are real, and the killers, cold-blooded. Viewer discretion is advised.
Given its premiere date of April 1st, it wasn't completely impossible that In Ice Cold Blood, hosted and produced by Ice-T, was an attempt by the Oxygen PR department to prank me. It may actually still be that, but the real question is the show as bad as Finn Tutuol at line reading circa 2001? And is anything as bad as the Mysteries and Scandals reboot we're considering in the cold case section today? Listener discretion is advised for The Blotter Presents, episode 50. Welcome back, everybody. This is The Blotter Presents, episode 50. The Blotter Presents is Previously.tv's take on TV true crime. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am joined once again by Eve Beatty. Hello, Eve.
Hi, Sarah.
I am so glad that you agreed to you agreed to take this on with me, because I really did think maybe we were being punked by Oxygen.
Right.
For what we're covering in our Most Wanted section today. In Ice Cold Blood, before I get into the case file, we have a word from our executive producer, Ice-T, from the press release. Eve called this hilarity to my attention. Quote, "I'm glad to call Oxygen home with a series that speaks to me as a true crime fan. Each story is extreme but very real, making it a natural fit for me to explore with the audience."
It's just like, you know, we've all been at one side or the other of a press release in our time. And I, you know, understand that PR people have to write quotes to put them in there. But it's like, at least try to make it sound like Ice-T just a little bit. Cheesy pun, some swears, you know, talking about killing cops, anything.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much like meta layering happening with this entire project, given Ice-T's previous life in the hip hop space. But it gets even funnier, this meta-ness, when we get into the case file for the premiere. Julie Kubuishi's body, there are 68 pronunciations of both this name and the other victim. So forgive me if I murdered that one. Julie's body is found in the apartment of her friend Sam Herr, also called Hare. And Herr is in the wind, but a teenager is using Herr's ATM card. Where is Herr? Was his relationship with Julie more than friendly? And what prompted producers to premiere In Ice Cold Blood with the story of a bad actor acting badly in every possible way? Okay. Had you heard of this case before, Eve? Because I did a little digging, and apparently every single true crime news mag has covered this case, and yet this is the first time I'd heard anything about it.
Well, yeah, same here. I was not familiar with the case, but, you know, as soon as I, you know, hit Wikipedia, I saw that, that everyone's had it. And everyone's had it pretty recently, too, because the trial, Daniel's trial, which they don't mention on the show, the trial of the man who confessed to the slayings, spoiler, you know, only wound up a little more, not even 2 years ago.
Yeah, and I believe that his ex-fiance and brother, I'm not sure what the timeline was on the brother's accessory trial, but his ex-fiance was charged as an accessory, and that went into court earlier this year. So this has been going on a while.
Well, I actually pulled something from the Orange County Register that I'd like to talk to you about right now. They were talking about why, you know, and this is one of those things that we get at the very beginning of the show when Ice-T's talking. He's like, how could a I'm paraphrasing. I should have asked for the clip. You know, how could a case like this happen in sunny Orange County? And I'm like, well, buddy, how it could happen is there's a lot of freaking crime in Orange County. I pulled the comp stats, information for Costa Mesa, which is where this crime occurred. And, you know, on average, they have somewhere between 9 and 5 homicides a year. None of them as dramatic as this one, sure, but it's not unheard of that in Costa Mesa, that city alone, there are plenty of, you know, sort of cases. But
and isn't that where all this Dirty John stuff went down as well?
Yup. How could that happen in Orange County? But so in this Orange County,
pull up a chair.
In this Orange County Register article, this is regarding the fiance of the killer's trial, which is still sort of pending as of February of this year. Speaking to the judge, Murphy, one of the county's top prosecutors, and that's the sort of like good-looking, slender white guy that we see in this episode.
Yeah, he looks a little like Redporn.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
He looks a little like a young James Redporn. He's cute.
So Murphy, quote, explained that he's set to try a serial killer, Andrew Urdialis, this month, followed by Edward Shin, accused of killing his Laguna Beach business partner. Murphy's then slated to prosecute alleged jail escapee Hussein Nayari, who was accused of kidnapping a marijuana dispensary owner and severing the man's penis. So, I'm just saying, there's a lot going on in Orange County, Ice-T, that might surprise you, and also, it sounds like one of the reasons that these cases are taking so long to wind their way through court is because there is so much going on in Orange County.
Either that or Matt Murphy is too busy sitting down to talk to 48 Hours, In Ice Cold Blood.
Thank you.
2020, that he doesn't have time to deal with his caseload. Oh, my God. Yeah, that was pretty terrible writing. But there's so much classic Ice-T delivery in this show. Before we figure out, like, the show takes a good half its running time to finally get to the meat of it, which is that Sam Herr did not kill Julie and then split. They both got killed by the same dude, Dan Wozniak, no relation. Spoiler. But here's a classic bit of Ice-T, quote, acting in clip two.
Sam and Julie were great people and even better friends. But you know this story is not going to end well.
How do we know that they're great people, Ice-T? I would like some sort of verification for that assertion. I'm not saying they were bad people, but, you know, he just sort of says it. Were they great people?
Well, one of the things that I think this show is actually relatively good at, and we'll sort of get into the, like, our overall take on the show towards the end of the segment, but one of the things I do think the show does well is that it gets talking head interviews with people who don't seem too rehearsed and have a certain, it's not the same just kind of boilerplate, she loved to laugh kind of thing. Like, we do have Sam's army buddy sort of testifying at some length that the guy was a real stand-up dude who had seen a lot of combat and acquitted himself well and stuff like that. And then we have a friend of
Violet.
Violet
was a friend name. It was a complicated spelling.
V-Y-L-E-T. We'll get back to her because she made some funny faces. But I thought they did a good job with the ratio of those to how much of Daniel's interrogation we saw, and the parts of it that we saw. I think they used the usual building blocks, but they used them advisedly, comparatively. Well,
I appreciated that they made the effort to call out when we had a real crime scene photo and when we had sort of something that looked like photographic evidence that they had sort of rebuilt for the purposes of the narrative. Not every show does that. You know, sometimes you're sort of blurry on what's real footage, what are real photos, and what are recreations. And I thought that they followed a nice little sort of ethical line there.
They did. And you will see one of the more inadvertently hilarious frames of one reenactment of the fiance basically clapping her hands over her ears and being like, la, 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 I don't want to hear this. That will be in the visual aids, which you can see on our social media. That's at Blotter Presents in both Facebook and Twitter. Here's another pretty funny interstitial note, I guess, from Ice-T that doesn't really seem to add much, except that the use of the word buddies at the end reminds me that Ice-T is like kind of old now and really sounding kind of dadly. Here's clip three.
I'm not sure Daniel understood that murder investigations don't get put on hold for bachelor parties, especially when the bachelor himself is a suspect. But you can bet your ass that police aren't about to sit on their hands while Daniel sows his wild oats with his buddies.
This from the man who, for so long, was such an opponent of the police. And now he's like the cop's best friend, which whatever, you know, I'm not demonstrating any bias here, I hope. But I'm saying, you know, I remember Cop Killer. I remember his concerns about Law and Order. And now it's like, well, the police, you know, they're the heroes in this case. Which, yeah. I'm not saying they aren't, but, you know, how the worm has turned.
I do kind of feel like Oxygen lost an opportunity to have this co-hosted with Ice Cube and then just have this, like, Cop Killer, fuck the police.
Yeah.
Thing.
Well, Cube's got bigger fish to fry, I think. Well, I would like to think that Ice-T does, but, I mean, is it too early to say that I feel like the biggest problem with the show is Ice-T?
I don't think so. No.
Okay, I think the biggest problem with the show is Ice-T, because I felt that they built a compelling narrative on the story that I should have known about and didn't. I felt like they built things up well. Well, we can talk in a minute about sort of some of the weird and conspicuous omissions to this case as presented to us on this episode. But the biggest problem for me were the Ice-T ins and outs. It made everything else feel laughable.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Like, I have seen Ice-T sort of being less of this Maureen Marr person and more his actual self in documentaries about, for example, the Notorious B.I.G., where this is a person who has seen a lot of shit and knows a lot of shit about, I think, a certain lane of crime. But I'm not sure I understand why, except for the play on words that isn't that strong. He's your host for this, which is fairly, again, boilerplate true crime shit. Like, they followed the boilerplate. They didn't do it poorly, but I just feel like he's being underused for what he could offer. That I like, as a host on like American Gangster : Music Files, sure, but for this, it's like, well, what does he add? Nothing.
Well, I should have watched the second episode, Sarah. You so kindly ripped the screener for me, but I didn't. But so what I liked about the concept, the in cold blood concept, which I actually was, I mean, if you could see my notes, like my first two pages are me complaining. Well, this was clearly a crime of passion. This was not in cold blood. This was, why do they call it in cold blood? But that's the thing, is it's like, all of a sudden there's this flip. Because at first, you know, you're led to believe this was a crime of opportunity. This was a sexual assault, blah, blah, blah. So not in cold blood by the definition of what a cold-blooded crime was. Well, it turns out, surprise, it was. So I liked that. I felt like, you know, they tricked me and they flipped me. And assuming that the rest of the episodes are not crimes of passion and are actually creepy premeditated things that initially seemed like crimes of passion, this is a great
The second one was
angle.
That. Yeah. But yes, the yeah. second one was that. The second one was, you know, sort of equally disturbing, and then you just have a feeling based on the first episode that there is going to be that clubhouse turn somewhere in the third act where you're like, oh, it was that guy.
Well, so I think that that's a cool angle for a show and not one that I've seen before, really, that the whole thing is you think it's this, you know, you think it's the obvious thing and it isn't the obvious thing. Like, I like that as a true crime sort of framework. And so I can see where they thought, well, who should we get to sort of personify, you know, being icy and cold? Schwarzenegger is Mr. Freeze, is obviously out. He's got bigger fish to fry. You know, what's the Ice Baby guy's got the home renovation show. And oh, besides, yeah, he's got legal problems of his own. So who are you going to get to, you know, seem cold? Well, Ice-T, he already has the Law and Order connection. He makes sense as a host. I'm sure he's getting money for it.
And you know,
I don't know.
He's got a baby. That's fine.
But I mean, if they could get like one of those people that like got frozen in a river and revived as the host instead, I feel like they'd do better.
Stone Cold Steve Austin. Also.
Nope. Domestic violence.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He's out. Who else? Yeah. Well, let's mull that over. Listeners, if there's some obvious pun slash host op that we're missing, please.
Extremely charismatic Arctic explorer. Yeah.
Sure.
A penguin standing there squawking at me, I would be snickering at less than Ice-T's delivery in some of these lines.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, he's having a good time and I don't begrudge him that, but yeah, it's like, well, whatever. I just don't see what he specifically adds to this. Like, you could just get Soledad O'Brien. Spoiler, don't do that. We'll get to it. But I also enjoyed how much Detective Shade was included in this episode, in the episode that we both watched, the premiere. Mm-hmm. Here's clip four where Daniel Wozniak is way overacting and protest a thing too much. And the detectives are really not having it with him in clip four.
I think you know a little more about this thing than you're involved in.
I have nothing to do with this because my life was in danger with my wife. I'm sorry.
What was your life in danger?
He threatened it.
Oh.
Then it was time to put the pressure on.
We asked him to go through a voice stress analyzer test.
How do you think he did on the test?
The results told us that he's being deceptive.
Dan, you got the answers. You can help us. I don't know what else you want me to say. I don't know.
Tell us.
I don't know.
Tell us the truth. You're not that good of an answer.
He's very dramatic, and he's got that. To us, it seemed like he was acting.
Well, so when that happened, I actually scrubbed all the way back to the first bit of interrogation room footage to see if it said reenactment, because that acting was so stagey. I thought, well, surely this must be reenactment. No human being talks like this and is, you know, and thinks that they can get away with it in public. Even a community theater actor from Costa Mesa.
Yeah. It turns out that he lured Julie to Sam's apartment, or no, excuse me. He killed Sam, went to his show, did the evening performance.
They said he did a great job, but I'm dubious given that performance.
Well, yeah.
Great job for community theater, guys.
Yeah. I had a clip of him, of his like big closing line. And then I was like, that's actually not as bad as his performance in various interrogations. So he kills Sam, does a show, lures Julie to Sam's apartment, kills her. Okay, cool.
And then fakes sort of a vague sexual assault sort of scenario by cutting open the back of her pants and writing on her sweater.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, and then
to his credit, it does not appear that he actually sexually assaulted her, so all right, yeah. Dan.
And to his fiance's credit, we're going to talk in a little bit about a throwback website that you found, in our lead up to the episode. But first, I'd like to, note that his fiance immediately was like, nah, before he was even formally charged. And like, what an idiot. Obviously, they're listening to this phone call, but all right, here's clip five, then we'll discuss.
I was sitting right next to Rachel when Dan called her.
I just talked to Tim, and I need to make a phone call to the detective now.
Why?
Tim said he had a murder weapon.
God, oh God, oh God. Babe, they can't find that. They can't. I don't want you to tell the detective anything. I mean, now I'm dead.
Baby, you're already dead.
I just love that she's like, yeah, you're already toast. Okay.
But it appears from, so that's like basically all we get on the show of the fiance's sort of involvement and the brother's sort of involvement. But it appears from news coverage surrounding the case that prosecutors believe that Rachel was actually aware of the plot, the plot to kill Sam in order to gain access to his $62,000 in savings, and even perhaps to kill Julie to implicate Sam in this crime. They believe that Rachel was aware of it, and they also believe that Dan's brother Tim, the guy who he, you know, gave the gun to, was also involved.
Well, and Rachel, I mean, all right, Rachel eventually stopped, I guess, visiting and responding to Dan when he was in prison. Would you like to talk a little bit about the website that listeners will find in our show notes?
Well, I have been thinking for a while that it's time for people to bring personal blogging back, because we all need to get off Facebook anyway. And, you know, I always loved blogs. I always thought they were great. And Blogger's so easy to use now. So I'm really happy to see this blog. Daniel Wozniak is my friend. My friend is on death row, convicted of double homicide. This blog is about our relationship. It's by someone who claims that they are Daniel Wozniak's friend. They are anonymous. They do not, however, know how to spell Rachel's last name. He says that the judge in Rachel's case is also a friend of his or hers. Our kids went to school together. Small world. So I mean, who knows? This blog is well written. It's literate, and it seems sort of crazy, but, you know, who knows? Maybe it's real.
Well, and look, content, success in the content zone is all about finding a micro niche and exploiting it. And this is that. So good for this person. And also for being a supportive friend to this complete and utter 5-star nationally ranked attention whore. The footage that they have of Daniel like bopping into court and finding his light every day is kind of like, it's pretty chilling. And this is not a small human being either. In the interrogation scenes, you will see in our in the photos, he's wearing this Hawaiian shirt that you're like,
it's,
really?
It's Sarah, I know exactly what that shirt is. The blue Hawaii pattern. It's a proprietary pattern, and you can only buy it at licensed retailers. It's owned by the Elvis Presley estate. My husband has one.
No kidding.
He bought it at Graceland. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons I think when you look at the shirt, did you notice how you can't quite see the pattern? That's just like, you know, when you watch reality shows and they blur out posters or whatever, it's a proprietary pattern. Yeah.
And I think that's the most interesting thing that is like even adjacent to watching this show. That's
Sarah,
good intel.
That's why you have me on this podcast.
That was really weird that I was like, why does he look more out of focus than this old footage? But I guess they just like jammed that whole, sequence so that the pattern would be blurry. Amazing.
I have some pictures of my husband in the shirt. I'll give it to you for the show notes if you want to show people what a presumed non-murderer looks like in that shirt.
presumed. That's important. Yeah, this guy Wozniak is... I will give the producers this. It's hilarious that they picked this like community theater semi-bad actor. Not that all community theater actors are bad, but this guy is not good. Not good enough anyway. To be the topic of the premiere of a show hosted by Ice-T, who is a beloved thespian in spite of and or because of his severe limitations of range, shall we say. Yeah, this guy is really out there and tough to take. And the asshole says what commentary by various detectives, both in the interrogation and in talking head interviews, is my favorite. Here's our last clip from this section.
The motive behind killing Sam was
money and insanity.
Okay. He was trying to go between laughing and crying. It was very strange.
Between laughing and crying.
Did you assume, like I did, Sarah, like, did you do, like, the cop show thing? He's trying to build an insanity defense. That's exactly where I went immediately. Yeah.
Yeah. And then at some point, I think they offered him a deal to get him off death row, which, like, it's California, whatever. Mm-hmm. If they didn't execute Manson, it's not happening. But I thought they were going to say that it's like the defense's strategy changes. And I'm like, oh, affirmative defense of his being bonkers. But then it reminded me of some line from a prosecutor in Fatal Vision, which didn't exactly say this, but was along the lines of, you know, people have been convicted because they're assholes before, but that can't be your prosecutorial strategy. So yeah, he didn't end up using that defense. He was offered a deal and took it. So,
but he is on death row. He's at Quentin.
Yeah.
So, I mean, San Quentin, which is the prison, right? Like, if you look at the Golden Gate Bridge and look to the right, you can see San Quentin Prison in, not when you look to the right facing San Francisco, the other way. So he's in beautiful Marin County as we speak. Sarah, I could drive over and see him like right now if I wanted to. I could be there in 20 minutes.
I don't think you should go, but I think you should send an acting coach. So I don't know that I'm going to continue watching this. And FYI, folks, this airs every Sunday at 7 o'clock on Oxygen. Oxygen's like burst schedule for new programming is very strange to me. But on the other hand, makes total sense. Like, they drop a lot of things just like on weekend afternoons. They're like, what are you doing? Then it's like, oh, sure. When else do you watch true crime? Weekend afternoon. So I don't know if I'm going to seek this out again or keep up with it, but if it's on, I'm not going to be mad. It's pretty good at what it does. Iced Tea is weird, but
yeah,
it's an okay show. It's not bad.
And if you're interested in this case, I noticed in my research that Investigation Discovery is also working on an episode involving this. So you might keep your eye on whatever, you know, various shows they have if you want to see any sort of follow-up or whatever.
Very good. All right. Well, we didn't have as much luck, I would say, with our cold case, but let's get to it anyway. Eve, you were intrigued by just about everything on the Oxygen homepage and told me to pick one. So because I'm sort of preoccupied with the Lilo Brancato's whole situation, I went with the reboot of Mysteries and Scandals. I believe this was confusing. I thought the whole show was called Young, Famous, and Criminal, but apparently this is Mysteries and Scandals, Season 1, Episode 6, Johnny's Dangerous?
Yeah, which is a problematic just to say. Well, I want to lead with, I really like Soledad O'Brien on Twitter.
I just like her generally. This show is not good.
I don't know what she could have done better, but this is, I mean, the whole thing that we have three separate stories, all of which, you know, sort of got a drive-by. Each one of these, I felt, could have been a fine and interesting episode, but by each giving them, you know, whatever, like 12 minutes, it becomes significantly less interesting because you just think, oh, that's weird. And then you're moving on and it becomes very sort of pat and cereal box.
Yeah. And there is a lot of time eaten up with O'Brien's interstitial comments, which again, this is not her fault, but they're redundant and the writing is not good. Let me just do the case file quickly of this episode. Johnny Lewis of Sons of Anarchy, Lilo Brancato of The Sopranos, and Red Power Ranger Ricardo Medina have more than TV in common. They're also the troubled and felonious subjects of Oxygen's Soledad O'Brien-fronted reboot of the AJ Benza joint, Mysteries and Scandals. The episode forced this viewer to ask which was the bigger affront to society, the actions of these possibly brain-injured, often drug-addled young men, the hideous budge injections one of the victim's sisters had in her face, or the aggressively trite voiceover commentary whose Crimotron 3000 assertions add literally nothing to the narrative. Okay, so the Johnny Lewis section, I did not remember any of this. I found it extremely sad. He had had some setbacks in his life, and it seemed like, you know, they could have gotten more into his real reasons for leaving Sons of Anarchy. But then he was in a serious motorcycle crash. It seemed evident to me, and certainly to his father, that he had suffered a traumatic brain injury and something was really wrong. He was just like assaulting people randomly, but suffering from hallucinations, like something neurological had clearly shifted. He killed his 80-year-old landlady / former mentor and her cat.
You know, I was relieved that they didn't go into that too much, because when we got to the and the cat, I was like, if this happens too much, I'm going to have to email Sarah and be like, let's pick something else.
Yeah, seriously. So then they did show a crime scene photo, which was like the very edge. It was like the bathtub and like a paw and some blood. Yeah. And I was like, even that, I was like, Johnny Lewis sucks. Yeah. Fuck him. Well, as it turns out, he probably took his own life jumping off a roof. So clearly a miserable, sad end for this guy.
Well, and I'll note that the homicide appears, and this is, once again, it's like, if this had been a full episode, they said, you know, there was a mechanical pencil found near the scene with blood on it. And I'm like, so was it the weapon? You know, I assume mechanical pencils look sharp, that it was the weapon, but like they sort of allied over a lot of stuff. I think just in an effort to, you know, to get concision that, I don't know, like for me as someone who's written about crime for a lot of time, for a long time now, the information that the murder weapon was a mechanical pencil is, you know, and I'll click on that. And so that they just sort of drove past that real fast, that just shows to me that people aren't really thinking about what grabs viewers.
Well, and there's also, you know, they should give him his own documentary probably, because there's absolutely I hesitate to use the expression top of mind, but here we are.
Yeah.
Given the recent coverage of the nasty, brutish, and short life of Aaron Hernandez.
Yes.
And compelling evidence that profilers have been mentioning for close to 20 years that, childhood physical abuse, including head injuries, there's correlation.
Yes.
So it just seemed like, I mean, they tried, but then they had to move on because they're sticking with this theme, which doesn't, like, they don't really have anything in common except, you know, that they killed people
and they were guys
actors.
On TV. Yeah.
Like that's, I don't know. I think you got to do a little better than that. Certainly they could have done a little better in their clip selection in the Lilo Brancato section than we got in clip 7, in which a very young and completely inarticulate Marky Mark tries to give Lilo some advice. Clip 7.
Still, Lilo never worried about the law. After all, he was a big star. When Lilo got cast in his next movie, Renaissance Man,
hey, how's it going?
Co-star Mark Wahlberg offered his own words of advice.
But you know, he's young, you know what I'm saying? He got talent, you know what I'm saying? And he's going into a business situation. And you know, you gotta look at it for what it is, you know? And you can't be, you know, the way you were, you know, before you walked into it.
Well, he gives me good advice, and I always tell him to do the right thing. He's like a big brother, he's my boy.
But Lilo ignored the warnings. He continued to act in films like Crimson Tide and Enemy of the State as his drug use escalated.
So you pick those two. Got it. So that's A. B, of course he ignored the advice. The advice was fucking incomprehensible and full of like filler phrases. I think I basically understand what Mark Wahlberg was trying to say, but if I've been smoking marijuana, I don't think that's making any sense to me.
Well, you know, and Mark Wahlberg was especially at that time hardly in any position to give people life advice, given how recently he'd been convicted of violent and racially motivated crimes.
Exactly. And C, this is another issue I had with this episode, is how, like, Lilo Brancato was not that big of a star. Like, he just wasn't. I only knew him from The Sopranos, and it's not like I pay no attention to media, never go to movies. Like, he really wasn't that big of a star. Like, the way that they position these guys as, you know, like, not Tom Cruise level, but I'm trying to think of, it doesn't matter. They've just, like, pitched them at this level so that the fall is that much further. And it's like, you know, I understand that you think that you have to make these different, like, you just have to blow it up more. Like, I've watched TV before. I understand what's going on here. But I think if you're going to rush past all of these cases so quickly, you could afford to just be a little more nuanced about where they were in their lives.
Well, I think that Brancato, if things hadn't gone wrong, he probably would have been fine, right? He would have been one of those, you know, sort of, hey, it's that guy. You know, he would have occupied the same space as like a Maloney or a Cateus, right? He's got that sort of look. Yeah. You know, thug number two occasionally, cop occasionally. You know, if he's lucky, a sci-fi show no one watches.
Yeah, why not? But yeah, I mean, and he wasn't getting work because he had substance abuse problems. Let's hear from the terrible writing that says nothing about the lethal results of his lifestyle. Clip 8.
Lilo Brancato Jr. was just another young celebrity savoring life in the fast lane. He thought he was untouchable until he became more interested in scoring drugs than his next big role. But Lilo was about to cross a threshold with lethal results.
I mean...
is Soledad in the shower when she's delivering this dialogue, too? Like, I hadn't realized when I was just watching it on my laptop how echoey that all was. She sounds like she's at the gym.
Yeah. And she is in, I mean, it's not as bad as those 48 hours on ID where Maureen Maher is like in this warehouse that's not even in focus. It's so bad. It's like from a like one of those text adventure games that you would play on your Apple III. It's so budge and pixelated. But yeah, she's in some, it looks like a loft space, but it's, you know, it's clearly not. She's not there. And yet they made the sound echoey, which I guess maybe to distract us from the string of nothing phrases she just said.
Well,
just
to be
fair, star savoring life in the fast lane. Like, you could not, if you tried, you could not put that many like careworn phrasings into one sequence. It's kind of amazing, actually.
Well, the Brancato story is the only story of these three that seems to not be basically just reblog or whatever you call it on TV. Yeah. You know, this, it appears that they had an exclusive interview with Brancato where they're talking to him because he's since been, you know, released from jail and is attempting to mount a comeback. Good luck. You were involved in killing a cop.
Yeah. Might want to move to California or Vancouver or Bahrain. Just a suggestion.
You know what, though? It's just like you're not going to be able to, no one's going to hire you. No one's going to hire you because everyone has security and everyone has to deal with the unions. It's not going to happen, friend. But that they got interview, yeah. that it wasn't just footage that they were using, that they spoke to him, you know, like, so that's, I guess, sort of like the nut around which this whole episode is arguably built. But then once again, it's like, so it looks like they talked to him for a while. He's clearly even though he's like 12-steppy and all that, I don't think he's working the steps that well. I'm sorry that I'm judging someone who's 12-stepping, but I'm going to do it. Because he is not accepting personal responsibility. He's saying, I accept personal responsibility, but anyway, I deserve a second chance, and here's why.
And also trying to lawyer the definition of murder vis-a-vis intent is like,
yeah,
again, you were standing there when a cop got killed. Like,
yeah,
I mean, you are why a cop got killed. You just mouth shut, eyes down. Don't be like, well, actually it was more like, no. That's not going to work.
Yeah. And, you know, so there was, once again, there was plenty to build a full episode around this. You know, you could do like Brancato's attempt to build his way back, have him talk to family members of the dead cop. Like, there could have actually been a really exciting episode of something here since you had Brancato at your disposal. And instead, it's a drive-by.
Or, better yet, let's have a whole show built around the experiences and insights of this active member of NYPD here describing Brancato's break-in partner and the guy who I think actually literally shot the cop in clip 9.
Stephen Armento is a convicted felon with a history of violence. I think he has more than a dozen arrests. This guy is a huge, huge, huge piece of
Why isn't he hosting In Cold Blood or whatever it's called?
Seriously.
Ice Cold Blood. Yeah, like, right?
Listeners, he's not just a piece of shit, this guy. He's not just a huge piece of shit, this guy. He's a huge, huge, huge piece of shit.
I found that man very charming.
Yes, me too. And he reminded me of, God, now I can't think of the name of it, but we covered it a few episodes back when I was speaking to Chris and Allison Lohuff about this series that is on Hulu on ABC, originally derived from this kind of like ride along reality show that ABC was working on when this crime was committed, and the cops in that who were just like so New York-y and genuine and like real and watchable. I will link to it in the show notes when my senile ass remembers what we were talking about. It really wasn't that long ago either. but yes, this guy was great. Like, just the pronunciation of huge, which I know everyone makes fun of it because that's how Trump says it, but Trump's from Queens. So yeah, I liked that guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, this show, the Power Ranger segment was interesting because I didn't realize that the Power Rangers were like Menudo, but sped up, like that they just booted the whole line every year. Did you know that?
Right. I hadn't. Well, you know, I think you and I are around the same age, so we're a little old for Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Like, so that wasn't like part of my, that was, you know, it was, I was already too old and too cool for Power Rangers, I think, when they were, you know, here in America, but I had no freaking idea. But that explains why, like, you know, people will be like, oh, well, you know, that's some person on Buffy, she was a Pink Ranger or whatever. That makes sense to me now.
Yeah. Oh, Julia Felicity.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which Power Ranger she was, but there was a joke about it in the first season. I remember that.
Then the rueful sort of interviews with the other former Power Rangers, and they're like, yeah, well, then, you know, you think you're going to be a big star, and then it's just sort of like sad shrug. Oh, and this, yeah, it was, it does
and
make
these
you
are
think
good
that maybe
looking kids, like the guy that they,
yeah,
the guy they interviewed whose last name I think was Faust, like, yikes. Mm-hmm. And then Medina, oh my God, like, at least try some modeling.
Well, Medina's hairline started to get a little challenging.
Yeah, true. That's true.
Later years. It's just, there were other decisions that could have been made about hairstyles at a certain point, but he wasn't willing to make them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well.
Yeah. But
it's that Agassi. It's that Agassi clubhouse turn that it's like, son, just, you got to do it. Just go ahead.
You got to make a decision, friend. But once again, this, I mean, and I remember like hearing about this because it was like a sensational case that involved a sword, and, you know, so that's interesting because of Power Rangers and the animal rescue, you know, so it's like he's living in this ranch house that's purportedly an animal rescue. And then like, what was the argument over with the sword and all that? Once again, it's like they left me wanting more in the sense that I felt that I had been, you know, I was denied a lot of details on the case. And if I'm just some, you know, jerk who's watching TV, I'm not going to Google it the way I totally did after I watched this.
Well, yeah, you sort of wonder, well, let's listen to our last clip, because that's exactly why I clipped this this last bit, clip 10.
Authorities took Medina into custody. He admitted stabbing Sutter with a sword, but claimed self-defense. Was this a case of an argument gone wrong? Or did the young actor who found fame as an action hero become a real-life villain?
Okay, first of all, boo. Everything about that writing, boo, including the like literal mic drop in the background. Calm down.
Well, also that noise, it's that same noise they make when you're on The Biggest Loser and you get on the scale and you've actually gained weight that week. We need to retire that noise. I'm sick of it. I am not a crackpot.
You are not a crackpot. Oh, God. I watched that show religiously because I was covering it for previously.tv, and you're so right. What the hell? Okay, so the other thing is, he has a sword, and then it's self-defense? Like, I mean, there are weapons that you can credibly claim, because it does not take that long to, like, have a split-second reaction and feel like you're defending yourself, that you can claim it's self-defense. I just don't feel that a sword is one of those.
Well, Sarah, I'm going to say this now, just in case it ever comes up in court. I keep a machete next to my bed, and I do have a sword by my front door. No, I am not Highlander the Raven, but...
Aren't you?
Man, how did I pull that one out of my ass? That was crazy. But I do have those things because I am a woman who lives alone, and I want to have something that, you know, I don't want a gun, I don't want anything like that. So I do have those weapons. If I use them on someone, it will be self-defense because I am not a violent person. So I just need to say that for the record right now. So when they're making the true crime episode about my self-defense sword slaying, I'm the slayer in this case, not the slayee. You know, they'll be able to play this clip. And
so, yes, it will be mitigating for you.
Self-defense.
Aggravating for me. No, I don't know where I would even get a machete. But I have two Louisville Sluggers.
Any hardware store.
Same thing. Like the bats are for the same reason. But it's like, why do you have? And then they also drove right by. Like, well, he was supposed to be in exchange for room and board. He was supposed to take care of the animals. Like, this is a very like 1930s live work arrangement that suggests dire financial straits is A, and then he's not taking care of the dogs. Like, could this episode chill out with the implication that pets are being murdered and or not fed properly? I don't need it. It's bad enough.
Well, and it's interesting that, you know, he initially, you know, he was detained and they determined it initially that it was self-defense, and it was only because of this woman who was at one time close to Medina, and that's how he got the rescue gig. And she's the person who oversees the animal rescue, and she's the one whose brother was killed. Is this right? And who fought to get him prosecuted. And it took over a year for them to rearrest him. And it seems like, once again, you don't really get this from the episode, that this woman was fighting and doing her own investigations and hiring her own people to get him, you know, and looking at crime scene evidence and all that and doing her own thing. So this woman who, God bless her, I found a bit tiresome in the interviews. Actually, this is an interesting story, though. Give me some more time with her. Have her explain how she fought to get this guy prosecuted when cops had initially dropped him.
Yeah, it's a it's just a missed opportunity. And I wanted to go back to your point that you were talking about before we played the last clip about viewers Googling stuff, because this kind of programming. Like, I guess you would call this hotel TV. Like, you're back at the hotel between the ceremony and the reception, just like wearing some slippers and having a Diet Coke and waiting to go back out again. But I think true crime TV is at this interesting, it's like in this interesting liminal space, if I may, about like between, do you want to keep people so interested and compelled that they don't Google, or do you want to accept that everyone's going to Google and try to bring the viewer in as more of a like co-investigator? Does that make any sense?
Well, I like where you're going with that. And I think but that's a different show than this.
Oh yeah. But that's what I think the challenge for the 48 hours is and the Dateline on IDs of the world, that it's like everybody has the internet in their back jeans pocket now. So What is your role in terms of like, do you want to try to get ahead of people just looking up what happened?
But nobody Googles. People don't even click on links in news articles anymore. I mean, I know from like the stuff that, you know, I write, you know, when I cite sources, the click through rate's low. And if people really Googled, then Catfish wouldn't be a show. So, you know, I do think a show like that is that, like where we're all investigators together, is a really interesting concept, though.
Well, yeah. But I also think, I mean, the fact that this Ice-T show had me interested enough that I didn't cheat, because usually I'll just cheat and look, because these shows tend to be very predictable and dull. And it's kind of like, well, why don't we just jump ahead and see? Like, I love Keith Morrison, but I don't need 42 minutes of him if I can have 18 and then Google it and see what happened. I mean, then again, my husband and I may have a true crime show watching betting culture in which we bet on things during the commercials and then dollars are exchanged. We're not good people. We're bad actors in the financial market sense. But yeah, I think it's interesting for if you're a regular watcher of true crime to look at and sort of assess whether they're trying to keep you from Googling or whether they just expect that you're going to.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's a good question, because there's, well, I just, you know, if you're trying to sort of create content, I feel like this show, like, especially since it is in that sort of digestible chunk sort of thing, this is great for not just hotel TV, but like taxi TV, right?
Oh,
assuming
sure.
People still take cabs. You know, it's 12 minutes. Your trip's probably 12 minutes. You've got one little segment. That's great. You know, break it up with some ads for Five Guys or whatever, and you're done. But if this is actually something where you're sitting there, say, at a hotel and you want something where you're not going to sit there and start checking Twitter, build out a full episode on any of these stories. And because you've already got your famous person at the center, they're already going to be more charismatic than poor Dan, the community theater guy. Just build it out all the way.
Not for lack of effort on Dan's part, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Mysteries and Scandals, like I've always liked Soledad. I hope this is like a low impact way for her to pay for some orthodonture for her kids or whatever else she'd like. Coach bag, that's cool. But unless there's a specific topic that it's covering that I tend to be interested in, like that either of our dads is the Zodiac, I'm probably not going to come back to this one. You?
Well, sir, while I have you here, like, what do you think about Oxygen's whole pivot to being completely true crime in the first place? Because I was unaware of this until you sent me this thing and said, oh, it's on Oxygen. And then I looked on Wikipedia and they said, oh, in 2017, they became all true crime after basically, you know, being just, you know, for the ladies for so long. Do we need another true crime channel? And are you becoming more of an Oxygen viewer because it is?
I don't know that we needed it, but I think this was a savvy response to what was clearly a large market demand based on the rise of Serial and the sort of embrace culturally of true crime as something that wasn't, with the exception of like Capote, unremittingly trashy, right?
Yeah.
And look, this podcast is exhibit B in, you know, at several alphabets of exhibits. So I think that was smart. I think that also the space that they were occupying in the Lady Channel space, every other sort of quote unquote Lady Channel was kind of beating them at their own game. Like we, TLC, own, they were just getting owned as it were by a bunch of other channels that had better or like stronger branding for their original programming, I would say. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, I think that true crime is traditionally considered kind of a lady thing.
Yeah.
So that's how they're doing it. And that's fine. I don't think I watch any more or less Oxygen than I did before, actually, because Investigation Discovery saw this pivot and did a pivot of their own to try to be more Sundance-y. That's, mm-hmm. that's working pretty well for them, I think. But Oxygen's lane is this very like predictable, fillery, overwritten, not inattentive, but like incurious recitations of crime fact that is, I don't know. But on the other hand, they have that dedicated podcast that I think is pretty good. I forget what it's called. Mm-hmm. Bloody Marys or Martinis and Murder, I think it's called. I don't have a ton of time for other true crime podcasts. I'm busy making this one, but that, I mean, it's pretty good. Like, I think they were smart to do it, but they should maybe in a year or so look at their programming, because, oh my God, there has been some garbage that I have watched for this, and it's almost always Oxygen. It's not ID anymore. Like hashtag killer post. That show.
Oh yeah.
I think that might be the worst thing that's ever been televised, including Land of the Lost. It was so bad. Sharon Martin, turn in your SAG card. How dare you?
Well, Oxygen, if you're listening, we have lots of ideas of shows that you could do better. So call us.
Yeah. The co-investigators.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
And or if we get a two show
deal, Two Crimes of the Vatican.
We can finally do that thing where I follow you around and narrate your life extremely dramatically as though I am Bill Curtis.
I've been waiting for it.
I know. Well, while we're waiting to get that done, Eve, where else can listeners find you these days?
Well, I do a podcast of my own with my husband, Tim Aholt. It's called Attention Shoppers, and it's on all the podcast things. It's about small business, retail, and the hustle. My husband and I own a store called Avenues Dry Goods in San Francisco, and we realize that it's really interesting, and it's sort of a common yet uncommon experience. So we're talking to other small business owners and interviewing them. We only have two episodes up, but we have a really good one coming out this week from a woman who's starting her own ice cream company here in San Francisco called Churn Urban Creamery. So you can find that at Attention Shoppers.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for visiting us again. And I hope that you will return very soon.
Absolutely.
Got something to add to the Blotter Presents case files? Visit our forums at previously.tv or hit me on social media. That's at Blotter Presents on both Facebook and Twitter. My guest is Eve Beatty, and you can find her on Twitter at Eve B. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. We'll talk to you next time.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.